G'day guys, welcome back to another episode of the Inner City Hermit Podcast. Remember, as I always say, if you're enjoying the content, make sure you go over to YouTube, you subscribe on YouTube, or if you listen to the podcast any other way on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, make sure you subscribe there. Go leave a 5-star review if you love it. If you don't love it, I don't know, just lie and give it a 5-star review anyway so that more people can see me. Haha. Also, if you are wanting to follow the podcast, go over to social media, Instagram, Facebook, at Inner City Hermit for Instagram, or at Inner City Hermit Podcast on Facebook. Go join the group and follow on Instagram. Keep up to date. Yeehaw. Now down to finishing plugging myself. God, that sounds terrible. You know what I mean. My guest today is he went to school in Brisbane and has now recently just moved back to Canberra, but I would still consider him as a Brisbane local. It is Mader Music. Mader Music is a local DJ and music producer. So obviously he has a bit of experience with, you know, just general party DJing, and he also produces beats for, you know, he wants to aspire to produce beats for, I guess, other artists, which was really cool. And we had a great chat about music production, you know, his sort of inspirations and aspirations about where he wants to take music and why he loves it. And I don't know, there's something about music and recording and producing music that I find fascinating. The way sort of he was talking about his music, you just felt how passionate he was. And it was, once again, just an awesome podcast, a lovely bloke. And, you know, hopefully you guys really get invested in this. So this one's for anyone that is into music. We have Mader Music. Let's go. G'day guys, welcome back to another episode of the Inner City Hermit Podcast. Another one in the books. I got a very special guest here. Well, I got a Brisbane native, but he's decided to up and leave. How are you? I got Mader Music. What's up, big fella?
Hey bro, how are you?
Oh, I'm great, man. I'm indoors, I'm keeping safe, I'm feeling okay. How's things in Canberra? How are you traveling, brother? You all good?
Yeah, I'm good. It's getting cold down here. My brother's literally just walked in with his shirt.
Oh, yes. No, that's perfect.
Hello.
Hey, man.
What do you want?
We'll get a still shot. Get a still shot for the ladies.
Oh, my God. I don't mind, bro. Oh, man. Sorry.
Mader's had a special guest appearance on the potty. His brothers had a guest appearance. He's come on topless, yeah. So that's one for the ladies.
Canberra's good, dude. It's cold. Because I actually grew up here, and then I moved up to Brisbane in like 2013, and you know, I was used to the cold. Then I had to get used to the heat, and now I've got to get used to the cold again. And yeah, it's pretty fucked. Like,
it's a vicious circle, man. Like, you either, Australia's a weird place like that, man. Like, you can be in one area where you're like sweating your balls off, and then you literally go, you go like, you know, 6-7 hours drive down the road and you're freezing your tits off. It makes no fucking sense. Yeah, that's it, man.
There's fucking just Australia, bro. It's just so stupid. Oh,
it's a hectic place. And then you go down to Tasmania, and then who the fuck knows what goes on down there? You're pretty much in down there.
Dude, does anyone go to Tasmania?
I don't know. If anyone's listening from Tasmania, I apologize, but you do have a couple. There's a couple rumors around Tasmania.
I know.
So, how's things? Obviously, you know, you're in the nation's capital. You're in the ACT. How's sort of things down that way in terms of coronavirus and like how are you guys sort of dealing with it? Very similar to everyone else, just keeping inside, or what's it been like?
Yeah, like it's I think in regards to the enforcing of it, I think it's a little bit more relaxed than some of the other states. Like I've heard a few stories, like friends have said, like when they've been out, they had police come up to them and just give them a warning sort of thing. I mean, obviously I'm not in other states, so I don't know what it's like necessarily, but the stories that like people back home in Brisbane have said, like they've said they've been pulled up and and tickets, had tickets written, things like that. So I don't know. It seems as though it's a bit more relaxed down here, but I'm not entirely sure. I mean, last, I think every Friday, actually, at like the shopping centres, lots of the stores are open, and it's like real busy. It's busy as, which I'm kind of confused about because, you know.
Yeah, like, oh, no, I get that, man. Yeah, even around my area, like I'm living in apparently a COVID-19 hub because everyone's sort of abiding by the rules, man. Yeah, exactly. That's real safe, real reassuring for me, dude. But like everyone's sort of abiding by the rules. But I think if everyone's sort of outside abiding by the rules, you're still like fucked because there's still just like a clusterfuck of people just sort of hanging around. But it's interesting. Especially it's interesting for Canberra because obviously they've locked the borders, but you're like an island within an island. Like you're literally in a state within a state. So, you know, I always had conversations with people around like the fact that like, what the fuck do you do? Like you're like double locked down. You're literally like, you're like a lock inside a safe. Like it's fucked for you guys, man.
Because New South Wales, I think is where it's the most crazy. Especially in terms of the cases. I mean, I haven't even looked at the recent statistics. I can't really do it anymore. You know, it's so...
Yeah, bro. I feel like exactly the same, man.
Yeah.
There's only so much data you can look at before you're just like, fuck, my brain hurts, man. I just don't know if it's getting better or worse. You just sort of hope for the best, really.
Yeah. It's, you know, because, it's just fucking... It's everywhere. And it's actually, especially at the start, when it was all like, rah, coronavirus, like it was, you know... scary and shit, it was quite like felt quite like really dark and gloomy, like that's how I felt at least, because it's all over the news and you're hearing about poor people that are, you know, dying and people losing their jobs and selling their houses and shit, you know, and all this horrible shit, and it felt like almost like the apocalypse. It's just all this, you know, really dark sort of gloomy atmosphere, and it's just like, holy shit, what is going on? Like, and I mean, we don't even have the worst of it either, you know what I mean? Like,
I think that's Italy, the thing too. We're panicking, and you know, as you said, we're still okay, but it gets to a point where you hear so much negative stuff, and like, you know, for me personally, I'm kind of dealing with it okay, but it feels like it's unfair for me to say that I'm dealing with it okay. Like we were just chatting before, you know, we're both two people. We've got jobs. We're doing okay, and you feel as though that it's a weird vibe that you don't want to be positive because you're like, oh, am I throwing this in people's faces?
Yeah.
And it's a very odd sort of situation. I think for everyone, man, it's. Whether you're negative or positive or impartial, it's just weird. And you know, it's interesting, like, you know, talking to people from obviously different states like yourself and getting a vibe. And it seems like, you know, some people have such different views on how things are. And then some people are very similar. Like, it seems like, you know, you and I have seemed like we've got similar experiences. But you could talk to someone else in Canberra who's like, fuck, the world's fucking ending, man.
And it's
hectic. And it's really hectic like that, bro. But yeah, off the gloom and doom stuff, mate. I've always got to try and not talk about it all the time. But
no, I know.
Obviously,
I know, but see, that's the thing. It's so hard not to because it's just everywhere. But you don't want to talk about it because it is everywhere. But it's hard not to because it's everywhere. So you just end up fucking talking about it.
And we were, my girlfriend and I went for a walk the other day and, you know, we caught up with a couple of people that we hadn't seen in a while. And usually you say hello to those people and whatever, but it seems like everyone finally has something in common. Like if you saw a complete random at the shops, they're also getting affected by COVID-19. So it's like,
you know, 100%.
Yeah. It's crazy like that.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, there's a sense of, like we're all in it together. Like there is sort of a sense of community with it all, which the situation isn't good, of course, but I guess that's sort of the silver lining to it is, you know, hopefully once it's all over, we're all just more, you know, proactive about hygiene and we're all more, you know, appreciative, I guess, of things and more, just more communal. I don't know if that's the right word, but like, exactly like you said, you know, everyone's sort of just interacting with people they've never interacted with. And because, we're all in it together. So, which is, I guess, in a way, a good thing. There's no sort of discrepancy. You know what I mean? This is affecting everyone. So,
yeah.
It is what it is, though. It is what it is.
That's the attitude you got to have. It is what it is. We can't change it. You just got to keep keep chuffing on. So it's good.
But yeah,
enough. Like yeah, said, enough of the. Yeah, go on, go on. Sorry.
I was just saying, yeah, exactly, man. Topic, like you said. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously, I got you on for a bit of a chat. I did get recommendation from Das in that you're in sort of an industry that's and like we spoke about it before, and you were pretty honest with me and said like you haven't really played too many sort of club gigs, but you are like you're a music producer. So you know, you obviously go by Mater Music, which is like fucking awesome. And I've listened to a couple of your tracks once Darcy got put onto it, man, and it's sick. It's actually like, you know, for you guys as producers, it's actually a time for you guys. Like I'm seeing some fucking awesome stuff. Like there's, you know, virtual raves, there's people producing like song after song after song. Like it seems like it's actually a lot of the producer sort of industry is turning this into a massive positive. Like how are you seeing it?
Yeah, well, see, it's funny you bring that up. Exactly right. It's actually it's what, like, I mean, it's a lot to sort of talk about, I guess, but you know, I don't even really know how to start it. Like but everyone's staying inside, right? And there's no live gigs anymore, well, for the time being, obviously, sort of thing. So what that's done is basically, in a way, leveled the playing field for everyone. So from people from independent artists to, you know, the big artists that are signed to big labels and whatnot, to a certain extent, of course. But like, generally speaking, you know, everyone's in the same position. Everyone's sort of locked down at home, and there's nothing more you can do except either A, you know, like make music as a musician, or make content. And so what this whole lockdown situation has done is sort of, like I said, it's a level playing field now. And so now it's about, well, how can I get someone's attention? You're like, what content can I make now? Because Drake isn't playing any shows right now, but neither am I. Like, you know, like I might be playing shows right now, but neither is Drake. So, you know, how can I leverage this? And so everyone's getting real creative and thinking of ways, exactly like you said, you mentioned, like the virtual concerts and things like that. Like that's an easy thing to do, and it's so beneficial to you because people don't have anything else to do, you know, and you're bringing entertainment to people for what, half an hour or whatnot. Like people can only watch so much Netflix. People can only play so much games. Like I've been at home heaps waiting, you know, because I've obviously, like you mentioned, I've just moved down here, and like I haven't had my big computer here to be able to make music and do anything. So I've just been playing games like on my laptop and whatnot on my friend's computer. And dude, I can, you know, you can only do it so much before you start going crazy about like, and I'm pretty like nerdy and whatnot. So I can only imagine what the real sort of real introverts, how they're, you know, coping with it all. But like I said, you know, it's forcing people to be creative and think of things like new ways to get people's attention, which is great. And especially in an industry like music or even film or any sort of media entertainment industry where, you know, you need people's attention, a situation where it's based on content creation and creativity is actually quite beneficial in a way. Now, there are downsides to it in that, like some people don't like it as well because of the fact that it is now more so content driven as opposed to, you know, music driven.
If
that makes sense. So
I was just gonna say, it's like, you know, instead of like, you're not only now competing against other DJs, you're literally competing against its content creation as a whole. Like you're competing against Well, not really competing, but it's just a heavily saturated market now, you know?
No, you're right. Like, I mean, to bring up two examples, I mean, like, for example, like you could say now, you're right, like a big artist that would normally be playing shows, right? I mean, to dumb it down, I guess you could say, like, let's say you're big into Drake's music and you're also really big into watching, I don't know, like PewDiePie, for example, on YouTube, right? Originally, or, you know, before all this went down, you would be able to go to Drake's show and then when you got home, you could watch PewDiePie's content. Now you have to decide, all right, do I want to watch Drake's content that he's putting out because he's not performing shows, or do I want to like watch PewDiePie's? So, yeah, like you said, everyone's competing, not just people in the music industry against people in the music industry. It's people that – it's content creation in general. It doesn't matter now. So you're exactly right. That makes a lot of sense.
That's the thing too. So and it's also, I guess, it puts you in a weird position because you obviously don't want to, you know, forget your roots. Like, what do you enjoy? But I'm seeing a lot of people now, like, you know, with TikTok and stuff like that, people, I've seen a couple musicians try to get into that like viral video sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hard to kind of balance those two. Like, if you, you know, if you really double down on, like, you know, like, for example, yourself with music production, you start to, if you're kind of unsure about it, you start to weigh up like, hey, you know, music production is cool, but do I need to now expand into different areas? And that could be a problem in itself as well, eh?
Yeah, no, exactly. Oh, shit, low battery. Fuck off.
Nah, you're fine, bro. There you go. You're back.
No, you're exactly right. That was like, even before all the COVID-19 stuff has come along, right? That it was already moving towards that way of you can't just be an artist anymore. You have to make content as well to get people's attention because the market's so saturated, as you mentioned. It is. It already was. And now it's even more so.
Yeah.
But and so the big thing for lots of musicians, was always like, oh, and even I've had this thought myself because – and Darcy – has like gets mad at me for it because I always have had the like mindset like, oh, you know, you want to get big for your music, da 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 da. Like, I don't want to be labeled as a content creator. I want to be a musician first, then a content creator or whatever else. Yeah. But you know, it is what is it? Dude, I can't even speak. It is what it is. Like, that's just the way it's going. If you want people's attention these days, you've got to be putting out content. And like, there's nothing else really to it. I mean, yes, good music will always win in the end sort of thing. But if that good music doesn't have any sort of push behind it either, you know what I mean? You can only do so much with it. And especially when you're competing against... See, the benefit these big artists sort of have is that are signed to labels and whatnot, is they have these big big budgets behind them, big marketing budgets and whatnot. So they can produce... Like, they could put out... I've seen some pretty dog shit content. I guess obviously it's all opinionated, but I've seen some pretty dog shit content. But they can just get it in front of your face because they just have the money to just shit it out advertisement wise, you know what I mean? And get it in front of people.
Well, you know, I look at someone like, you know, I've been pumping, like, and you probably like know of him. I've been pumping Kid Laroi lately, right? And
dude,
and
Kid Laroi, bro.
I love
He's
Kid Laroi. I love everything about him, but the thing that, see, I didn't really know too much about Kid Laroi until Cole Bennett from Lyrical Lemonade put him up and directed some of his clips. And then sort of I backtracked through his catalogue. So, like, I say backtrack through his catalogue as in, like, I've listened to some of his old music. But it's amazing to see how, you know, there's this weird sort of jump. Like, he obviously built his own fan base, like, himself through hard work, dedication, putting out loads and loads of songs. Like, there's videos of him rapping when he was, like, 12 years old, man, on his mum's, iPhone 3. But then once you make that jump of, you know, he's got that backing of Cole Bennett, all of a sudden you go from here to here almost overnight. And I think... It's weird to see, you know, you look at, and like, I was going to chat to you about this obviously too, because you're not only a DJ, but you're like a producer too. So I'm assuming you're probably wanting to work with like other musicians and get into that sort of stuff. So you see someone like Blueface, for example, who has like, you know, one or two good songs and then all of a sudden is flat. And then you see someone like Kid Laroi, who you know is just going to be producing all that good content. And then you're kind of that grind of, those first few, like you said, good music always wins in the end. That grind of what you get to that point, and then you get that push. You've got that backbone of what you used to do. Whereas some of the artists who get that random, like
that
sometimes
hit
it's
at the start,
that's it. And you're sort of working your way from top to bottom instead of bottom to top.
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. It happens a lot. And like, look, like I can't talk on it from experience as if I'm some big artist, because I'm not. I wouldn't even consider myself a small artist. I'm only just now starting to sort of put things out. But you're exactly right. And it happens a lot. You see lots of people have these big, big hits, you know, at the start of their career, sometimes even their debut singles. And then it sort of falls off a lot because, you know, when you, especially if you have such a successful record, right, you know, if you release such a successful record that does crazy numbers and whatnot, the labels as well are looking at it, because the labels, a lot of the time, they're only looking at it from a business perspective, because they're a business at the end of the day. So it's understandable.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, they don't give a fuck about the artists. That's why you hear all these stories about artists getting fucked over in their contracts and whatnot, because it's a business. They don't give a fuck. But and in saying that, you know, like I said, if you have such a massive hit that does crazy numbers and whatnot, you're expected to match that at the very least, if not surpass that. And then when that doesn't happen, the label, they don't give a fuck. You're not making them money. They don't care about you. A lot of the time.
Yeah, you're like a racehorse, man. You're like a racehorse.
I'm probably going to get blacklisted before I'm even...
Nah, you won't, mate.
But, like, it's true. A lot of them, they see you start, your numbers start dropping, and you just...
Yeah.
That's it. They cut funding. They cut budgets on you and things like that.
Yeah, so you see, like you said, you know, you're a small artist. Well, you wouldn't consider yourself a small artist, but I think in a way though, man, like you love what you do. You know what I mean? Like you love what you do, and because you love what you do, you obviously are invested, and you would know the industry. Like you obviously wouldn't know the ins and outs of everything.
No, I don't.
By being involved and being a music producer and being passionate and loving it, of course, by nature, you're going to get a better understanding of, obviously, what the industry's like. So even though you say, like, oh, you know, I'm only small, you would still have a really good opinion and a good sort of, you would have a very leveled opinion on these things, because not only do you produce the music, but you would know people, you would know other people that do. You'd be way more invested than the average Joe. So when you, I wouldn't take anything away from your own opinion, man. I think your opinion is probably one that's great, because you're starting from the bottom, you know, you're working your way up. And if I find if you're an independent artist, you get a lot more, and this is coming from an idiot, so don't take anything what I say seriously.
Stop.
But you have, you know where to go, and you know what to avoid, and just through like experiences through others. So, man, I wouldn't take away from your opinion. Your opinion probably is a great one, because you're someone who's probably about to deal with all this shit. So,
I appreciate that. I do.
Yeah, it's probably the thing that's good about, you know, talking to small artists is no small artist is sitting there like, I'm going to be the best fucking, you know, I'm going to be the future of music. You know what's in front of you. You know the hurdles that are going to happen. So, you know, exactly, I wouldn't take away from your opinion, dude.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. That actually means a lot. But, you're not wrong. I mean, I don't know about every, but I know I did. When I first started getting into, like, producing music, making music, all you think is, I mean, because you're shit at it. I still consider myself shit at it. You've always
been. Oh, bro, you should see what I do. I still fuck up my podcast, bro, and I've been doing it for like 50 episodes, man.
Yeah, but see, that's sort of what I was going to get at, though. Like, you're always going to make little mistakes. You just sort of know more ways to deal with problems, I guess. Like, that's all music producing really is at the end of the day. It's problem solving. The more you know, the more method, like, then the more solutions you have for problems you encounter when you're trying to make a song. And, like, that's really it, if you look at it that way. And like, when I was sort of getting started, I mean, even now, I mean, not so much now. Now I'm like, all right, bro, relax a bit. Because I've gotten a little bit older, and you sort of realize
this doesn't happen. Yeah, you sort of get a little bit more level-headed.
Yeah, when I first got into it, hang on, I gotta let the dog out of my room. One sec.
Yeah, go for it, brother. No, don't stress, mate. I usually have to do the same thing as well. My dog Luna, mate, is an absolute nutcase. Like my girlfriend was doing consults for her online business, and the amount of times like she was texting me like, "Can you take Luna out? She's pissing me off." I was like, "Bro, I totally get it, man."
Yeah, all right, babe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, when I was. Because I started producing in, I started, I got into DJing in like 2012. I got into like house music like 2011. Then I got into DJing in 2012. Moved up to Brisbane from Canberra in 2013. And that's where I met two of my closest friends who were already producing, and then they introduced me to it. So we got along straight away because we were all into the same sort of music. But I was only DJing. They were sort of DJing and producing. And then, you know, obviously we got along really well, and they're still two of my closest friends. Shout out Tyson and RJ.
You!
and so they really introduced me to producing. And because I always thought, oh, fuck this, I'm just going to be a DJ. I'm going to get big and famous from just being a DJ. I don't want to worry about producing. I don't care about that. But then the more you're around it all, you start getting your own ideas, and you're like, oh shit, all right, you know, like, oh, all right, I'll give it a go. And then you fall in love with it. You've got all these ideas. And at the very start is when your creativity is at its peak, because you don't know anything about it. You don't know the rules of making music or anything like that. So you're just doing whatever you think sounds cool. You're not thinking like, you know, oh no, I can't do that because that doesn't sound good when once I finish the song and render it out, it'll sound shit like that on an iPhone speaker compared to headphones. Or you get too hypercritical when you start learning all the intricacies and details of any craft, I suppose. I mean, you're probably the same with podcasting or not. You know what I mean?
Definitely, man. I was doing my like 1 year video, and I literally couldn't even include some of my early videos because the audio was so fucked,
yeah, yeah,
man.
You hate it so much. Yeah,
yeah.
But at the time, you're just having fun. Do you remember when you first started? You don't know shit about audio quality and whatnot. You don't give a fuck because you're just doing because you're so passionate about it. And it's the same thing.
That's it, man.
You don't know any of the, you don't know any rules. None of that shit matters because you're just like, oh my gosh, what is this? I can transfer what's in my brain, this idea in my brain, onto this screen, and then it comes out in audio. That's all you're thinking. Like, you're like, wow, and there's so many things to learn. You're excited. You're talking to your friends about it. Yeah, dude, check out this song I made, dude. The amount of times I would bug the shit out of my friends, like, dude, check this out, you know, and it was just horse shit. Like, for the first, I'd say three and a half years, before you really start to get the hang of how to structure it all, you know what I mean? And you learn basic sort of mixing so it sounds like sort of balanced and whatnot, and just basic song composition, you know, melody and chords and blah, blah, blah. But I went way off track with it all. But what I was going to get at was when I first started, I thought I was the shit. Everyone does. Like I said, boys, check this out. Like, this is fucking... I used to go around, like, saying things. I remember I told my film teacher, my film class teacher, like, oh dude, check this song out I made with Tyson, the other producer friend of mine who I you know met at school, and he'd already graduated because he was a few years above me, and I remember showing my film teacher because he had the same teacher, like, oh, look what Tyson and I made, you know, he knew who Tyson was. And like, it was all right, but Tyson did most because I didn't know shit. But I was telling my teacher, like, yeah, we're going to send it to, I don't know if you know the big DJ called Hardwell. Like, I was like, dude, we're going to send this to Hardwell and probably get on his podcast. And, you know, shut the fuck up, bro. Like, actually, yeah. Shut up. You know,
but there's like something cool. There's something cool in, like, those childhood, like, naiveties. Yeah. Like, you don't know any better, but there's something, you know, like, I get that in, you know, kids I teach, man. Like, I get... You know, drill rap is obviously because I teach in Logan and like teach in Woodridge where there's like No Money Enterprise, all those boys come out of there. And drill rap's really big at my school. And you see all these kids and, you know, as a teacher, like for me personally, as someone who creates stuff, I see that and it's great. Yeah. You feel it's like, you know, you should do it, but you should also understand that it's probably not as easy as you think. Like, you know what I mean?
No, 100%.
But you don't want to crush that. You don't want to crush that in them. No, you want them to be like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think as well, though, it definitely depends on the person. I mean, I'm not sure what it's like necessarily. You know better than I would. I'm not a teacher, but and I don't spend like that time around like kids to know who I can and can't say some things to in regards to like crushing their dreams, you know. But
I think
some people like do have a better understanding of like, no, this isn't going to be like a overnight thing. Like, you know, this is going to be like a fucking 4 years, 10,000 hours sort of thing at the least, you know. I like, because exactly right, I really started producing properly in like the start of 2015, I guess I've been producing for like 5 years now, right? That's like, that's a decent amount of time. That's okay, right? But I thought I was the shit, and I thought I was, you think you're some sort of prodigy who's going to, I thought I was going to blow up at the very latest once I'd graduate. I thought I was going to blow up while I was in school, do a Martin Garrix and be on jets to Ibiza every weekend playing gigs, playing Tomorrowland when I'm fucking 16. Like, I thought, that's what I really thought was going to happen. And then, as like you said, you know, as you get older, you start to realize and understand, like, dude, that is just a one in a million sort of situation. Like, that doesn't happen to everyone, but that's also okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's okay that it doesn't happen.
For sure, man, for sure.
Because when you start putting those sort of goals in mind, those fucking insane goals, I'm going to play Tomorrowland when I'm 16. You don't even understand what that means when you're 16. Do you know what I mean?
Let alone for sure.
Trying to do it. So now, as I'm a little bit older, I'm like, okay, you know, I mean, I would have loved to play Tomorrowland when I was fucking 16 and whatnot, but, you know, now I'm like, it's okay that didn't happen. Just relax. You're 21. You've got plenty of time. Lots of these big artists don't even end up, like, some of them only started producing music when they're 30. And they, you know, yeah, and then exactly, they break out in their late 30s. Like, there's a big trance guy, Armin van Buuren. He's like a legend in the scene. I think, I mean, and don't quote me on this, but he started producing late, maybe late 20s or late 30s. I could be wrong on that. But, and I mean, he's super successful now. T'Chami is another one. I'm not sure if you know him. He's not as big as
I know. T'Chami's set with Marla is... Oh,
bro. Love Point. Those boys are sick.
Love Marla.
Dude,
everything about him is fucking gangster. Like, even the way he comes out on stage, he gets uncuffed, dude, and he just
stands there.
Oh, dude, it's unbelievable. Yeah, man, it's dope. But, like, even that, like, you know, you don't even things like T'Chami stuff. Like, you see them, you know, they might take on music, but you see the tip of the iceberg. As fans, we see the tip of the iceberg. We don't see the relentless hours in front of the screen. We don't see like, I look at, you know, one of the big, obviously, TikTokers, like Charli D'Amelio, and she's only young. She's only, like, 15. But, man, that girl's been dancing for years. Like, this is not randomly started dancing on TikTok. She found our platform, but in terms of the art of dancing, like, she would have been doing that for years, man.
Grind time, like, straight up.
Oh, that's it, man. That's it. And like we said, as fans, we see the tip of the iceberg. Like, all it takes is one YouTube search for, like, you know, background of this person, and you understand, like, holy shit, man, this person's come from... Yeah. They failed and failed and failed and hang on, they got one and then they failed and then they got up again. Like, Post Malone, dude, go back and look at Post Malone's all fucking videos. Yeah. Holy shit, they're garbage. Yeah. But he is a fucking weapon and he just kept at it. He just kept at it. And look at him now, man.
That's, yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Like, oh, shit, I forgot what I was going to say. I mean, oh, that's right. About, like, tip of the iceberg. Like, that's so true. That's so true. I mean... You have a few artists who do some really good sort of vlogs and docos. I mean, it's like, I'm a huge... So Martin Garrix is kind of like my biggest...
I saw you wearing his shirt.
Yeah, bro. Hey. the old logo too, mind you.
How good, man.
And he has a really good doco series on, like, tour life and things like that. And you see lots of behind the scenes of shit. Just him in the studio for hours and stuff. And, like... I mean, and even that's not all of it, you know what I mean? And, like, from experience, the amount of sleepless nights I've had because you just stay up all fucking night on an idea. Because if it's, like, 12 a.m. and you get rolling, you're not going to bed. You're like, no, I got to finish. I got to get this. Just got to get, like, if you're making house music, you might be like, oh, I've just got to get this right, like, this intro and then this rise and the drop done, and then I'll go to bed because I don't want to, like, lose this creativity flow I'm on and or, like, forget the idea or whatever. Like, I'm in a good zone right now, and you just bang it out. And then the amount of times that ends up going from, you know, 1 or 2 hours planned all the way for, like, you check the clock and it's 6 a.m. You're like, holy shit, and then you go to bed for a few hours, wake up at 12 p.m. That's 12 p.m. Sorry, like 11 a.m. or whatever, you know, late morning, and your eyes are stinging because you've been staring at this fucking screen all night with a grid, looking at sound waves and, you know, hearing the same kick drum for 6 hours. You know what I mean? And I'm not even a successful artist. You know what I mean? So you can only imagine the hours that these guys are doing. And yes, a lot of them do get lucky and whatnot. But like we mentioned earlier, a lot of the times when they get lucky, it tends to sort of plateau and cap off at that, and then it just declines slowly. The people that tend to have the more successful careers on average are the ones that, like you mentioned, sort of rose up and came from the bottom up, and like a steady growth.
Because yeah, they were ready for success. They were ready for it. Like, yeah,
exactly right. The steadier your growth, the more time you have to accumulate and build a fan base and accumulate and build knowledge on the scene. Your 3 years of slow growth might be 3 years worth of shit deals and shit contracts that you now are educated on, whereas someone who blows up overnight won't know shit. And maybe they get unlucky and have like a shitty manager or whatever, or someone who knows they can just milk them for money for a year or two and then fuck off when the artist starts to die out, you know what I mean? And the fan base starts to die out or whatever. So, because a lot of it is business-sided, like we mentioned. So I don't know. I can't speak on that. I don't know that much about that area, and I obviously haven't experienced it. But I imagine a lot of it is balance. I mean, from what Martin Garrix and all those really big artists go on about, they do talk a lot about how they have to find that balance between work life and regular life. Because a lot of them are just kids who were producing in their bedroom for years, had success, and then they're just thrown into this life of playing a show in a different country every night. You know what I mean? So they go from 0 to 100 real quick as well, you know. And so you can only imagine the sorts of things you'd learn and experience. I mean, I imagine there'd be shitloads of bad times. It's not all, you know, good times just because you're headlining Coachella or whatnot. You know what I mean?
Think a big one in that is obviously, you know, Avicii. Like nobody saw that coming, man. Like, you know, from what you see online, what you see everywhere, Avicii looked like he had the greatest life, but man, you know, there was parts of Avicii that we didn't see. And that's a really sort of, I guess, hard thing when you get that news, you know. Like, for example, me, I'm a diehard Mac Miller fan. Like, Mac Miller got me through some terrible times. Like, I was an OG Mac fan. And then when I found out Mac died, man, I sat on my bed and literally bawled my eyes out because I felt like someone who you were so close with, but you go like, what didn't we know about him? Like, we saw the highs, we saw all that, we saw the Kool-Aid, frozen pizza, like, we saw this young Pittsburgh rapper just living the dream, but there was obviously a part of Mac that the public didn't see, and that's the hard thing as a fan. You're like, fuck, like, you feel like you know them, but you didn't, you know?
No, exactly.
It's hard like that.
100%. Like, I think what's really sort of, you know, what's so heartbreaking about it all, when someone you idolize so much, or someone you're such a big fan of passes away, especially tragically like that, you know, you think about, like you said, you know, you only really see the tip of the iceberg, but you were still such a fan of them just for that small amount of them that you knew. So just heartbreaking because you only knew this tiny piece of them. You only knew their artistry and maybe a little bit of their home life from maybe vlogs or whatnot, you know, their other sort of content outside of their music. But they would have had these whole, you know, we don't know about their childhoods and who they rode their bike with to school and all these memories, you know, like, and it's sad because at the end of the day, we relate to people on a personal level. You know, we're all just humans. Like, you and I could probably have a conversation about all the things we did in primary school, and we never, like, we've only met recently. Do you know what I mean? But we still get to go back and forth about it because it's just human nature, and just things we've both experienced that are similar. And so you know for a fact you've experienced similar things to this person who's tragically passed away. And I think that's what makes it so worse. They have all this. You've only seen all this success. They have this all this awesome shit going on. You know, they're on top of the world. They got all this money. They buy their mum a house, all this stuff. And at the end of the day, they're just a human like you who, like for example, when Avicii died, I remember I was sitting on my steps just like, holy fuck, like, holy shit. And you just think, man, I mean, you think of all sorts of things, but I was just thinking, like, shit, what could you have said to that person? Like, you know what I mean? And could you have said anything? I mean, if you're Avicii or Mac Miller, you've got fans DMing you fucking 24/7 telling you how much they love you, like, how much your music has changed their life and saved them from depression or, I was going to do something horrible to myself, but your music saved me and whatnot. And then that still wasn't enough. So, I mean, the places those sort of people must be in to do something like that, I mean, I guess we won't really get into that. It's pretty, you know, pretty tragic and dark. But like,
yeah, of course.
I mean, I've never experienced that. And I hope I never do, because that must be horrible, especially, you know, especially being in that sort of position. Not that it should exclude you from being able to feel upset and negative emotions. No way. But you would, you know, you would think, like, surely there's, you know, having more money or whatnot gives people better resources. Like, I wish I could have done something to help them. I wish maybe I reached out or whatnot. But at the end of the day, I don't know. What really can you do? It's just fucking sad, man. It's just sad.
Yeah. And you know, that's like we said, we see the tip of the iceberg, bro. We literally see the tip of the iceberg. Like, people strive for this thing of fame and money and everything. But you see, there's still people are still humans. Like, doesn't matter how big you get. It doesn't matter how, that's why I guess, like, I like this platform a lot. Like, you know, for a musician, you get like interviews, people like, oh yeah, answer this question. But they don't get to tell you, like, they don't get an hour or two to tell you who they are. Hour or two to explain situations. Like, how many artists have been ripped off because they've been seen in a certain way based on a video, but they haven't gone, hang on, you, like, let me explain this situation in a half an hour chat where I say, guy that I, you know, had a go at, or, you know, footage online, he's been pestering me for fucking like 5 days and I just got sick of it. Like, what were we saying?
I don't even remember.
No, I was actually going to ask you, bro. You know, you spoke about how you're obviously a DJ, but you're obviously in the world of production. Like, how does it differentiate in terms of making music? As sort of it, like, you mentioned, you obviously, like, you haven't been like DJing in clubs that much, but from producing music to DJ with, and producing music sort of like as a producer, like backtracks to rappers and that sort of stuff. How does that sort of differentiate between the two? Because I'd imagine, like, obviously tempo wise, you'd have to match. Like, not, you know, when you're DJing, it's your tempo, but when you're with I watch like lots of Kenny Beats stuff, and I see that sort of shit. And I'm like, how? Like, that's fucking fascinating. Where he makes a beat that a rapper just goes, "Holy fuck, bro! Like, this is unreal." Like, what's your experiences with that?
More like producing different genres, I guess. Is that sort of what
Like, how do you feel that sort of, like, I'd imagine there's sort of, you catch sort of a vibe and you're like, okay, this sort of thing would be like a grime mixtape, or this one would be sort of an old school hip hop. Like, how do you sort of see that?
Well, a lot of it is sort of have to go back a little bit and look at it this way. Like, because producers have different ways of, like, starting a track, for example. Like, some producers will have an idea, and then they'll open up their software and they'll be like, all right, you know, I already know what I'm doing, and they'll do it, you know, they'll put it all out. They'll already have the chords in their head. They'll already have a little melody in their head. They'll know how they want their drums to be programmed and things like that. And lots of other producers will just open up their software and just go from there. They'll just open up a synthesizer with a certain sound on it, and they'll just start messing around, playing notes, playing chords, and then they'll something will that you know they like will hit, and they'll just keep going with that, and then you just keep adding to it and adding to it and adding to it and adding to it, and then sometimes once you've done all that, you'll sit back and go, no, this is dog shit, scrap it. Other times you'll be like, this is like you'll be right, like this is fucking mad. Oh. And like you'll be thinking like, oh, dude, Drake would sound sick over this, or if it's a hip hop beat, or oh, Ariana Grande would sound sick over this, or you know, whoever.
Yeah, like, it seems almost like you're painting, like you know what I mean, like you have this blank canvas and you're just adding different things, like oh, this color will look good here, or this piece would look sort of like this will pop out here. Like it seems like very very much sort of. You're almost like I say this in terms of obviously you're an artist, but you're like a fucking, you know, easy, like the sound studio is your easel and you're literally painting like a sort of audio picture for someone in a way.
You know what I mean? Oh, 100%. A lot of it, I found with myself, you know, I tend to just go with like, not so much as, I mean, sometimes it's like certain emotions, or like I'll play one chord and you think about how that feels, or like what emotion you can relate this particular sound to. Like, is it, you know, is it sad, or is it like, does it sound like dark and like strong, or like, you know, kind of fucking gangster, what, you know what I mean, like there's millions of things
you get a vibe from it, like,
and exactly, some you're like, well, this is nice and flat, like happy and da da da, and you keep going with it because like this is a nice vibe. Other times you might be in your feelings, you start writing some sad chords down and shit. Like, you know, I tend to just go with, like, especially for lots of my house, like my house stuff, like the Mater stuff, it's just sort of ended up being like certain emotions that when someone listens to it, I want them to like think about, like I try to make the breakdown, so like the verse, sort of really emotional, maybe almost not so much sad, some of them are sad like sounding, some of them are like, you want, like I want people to think about emotions like lust and things like that, you know what I mean, and then I try to make my drops, you know, with a chorus, sort of energetic and like heavy, you know, like very similar to like Golden Features style. He has these really nice. Oh,
I fucking love Golden Features.
Yeah. I literally don't dislike any of his songs. I just have like a list of best to like the ones I like the most, like, the ones I like the least.
Best
to least. And like he's a perfect example. He has such a good way of writing these songs that have a really emotional verse, and then he knows how to transition that really well into a sort of vibey drop that still hits pretty, like still hits hard. And I think that's a really good like value of a value that a great producer holds, knowing how to transition moods sort of seamlessly. Because especially in my earlier years, right, I was doing lots of more festival-y EDM stuff, like electro housey sort of future house, that sort of stuff, where the vibe is a bit more playful and upbeat and happy, and then it goes into a sort of aggressive, like a big drop, but it's not like moody and vibey like the Golden Feature stuff or Marla's stuff. But I could never figure out, like, how do I go from this really nice breakdown, like verse, into a really like big and cool drop. That was probably my biggest problem and probably my biggest learning curve was figuring out how to transition from sections. And that sort of falls into the category of song structure. So how can I go from intro to verse to rise to chorus to second verse, all while keeping the same sort of story, if you will, or, you know, flow or emotion.
Far out, man. You know? So, when you hear it from you, it's, you know, from what an outsider sees, if you don't understand, you know, like it pisses me off because I have a lot of friends that make music, and to hear people like, that's not real music, I'm like, motherfucker, have you ever been at a DJ deck, man? I took one go at Darcy's, no, it might have been was it Darcy's or it might have been one of my other mates. And yeah. I looked at these buttons and everything and I was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, yeah. I have, you know what I mean? And so when I hear things like that and, you know, I've over the years come to appreciate that sort of, you know, EDM type and like that sort of yeah. music. Like I'm a like massive lo-fi stuff. Fan. Yeah. yeah, house music. You start to go like, hang the fuck on. Like this is yeah, just as hard as playing a fucking yeah. guitar.
Oh, dude, you know, they all share the same, I'm going to say, inconveniences. They all share, and difficulties, I guess. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like, earlier, like how I mentioned, a lot of it is problem solving. You still encounter, like, you think you know everything. I mean, I've been doing this for, like, yeah, like 5 years, 5.5 years maybe. And after a while, like, you always want to, I guess, in any field, continue to learn. Doesn't matter what it is, you know, the most ideal, I guess, way to progress is to just keep learning new things. But after doing it for a while, you get a bit of an ego. And once you, without sounding too egotistical, start to notice that, okay, I am starting to get the hang of this a little bit with my structure and the quality and just the overall song quality as a whole, you start to sort of fall into routine of doing the same things. Like all the music I've made over the past 6 months, I listen to, I'm like, oh shit, it's all pretty like follows the same sort of formula, if you will. And you can sort of trap yourself by doing that, because if you find success with something, a lot of the time you're not going to allow yourself the room to grow, because why would you if you're finding success with something?
Yeah, but it's exactly. very dangerous. Like, why fix it if it's not broke?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a very dangerous like trap though, because, and as we mentioned multiple times earlier, you can end up being one of those artists that has one or two hits. You try and do it again. No, everyone's sick of it. And people wanted something not new, but just slightly different. Just different enough to keep them there. You know what I mean? They've already heard that thing twice now. That's too much. Just change it slightly, not too much. You know? And I mean, perfect example is Medusa, who had Piece of Your Heart, or Piece of My Heart,
yep.
Piece of Your Heart. Fucking huge song. And then followed it up. They wrote all the momentum of that. They wrote off the momentum rather with shit. What's the one? The one with the vocal with Becky Hill. Shit.
Man, I got no idea.
I can't even remember the name of it. I'm sure if someone watching this, they'll know.
But there's the example. There's the example. You know the Medusa track. Like I
Lose
know
control.
It's on. There you go. Okay. Yeah, because yeah. I know that one all the time. But if you told me that they released another one or he released another one, I was like, what? Like, yeah. I haven't even heard it, you know?
Yeah. Well, but they've done it smart, though, because I mean, maybe they might have another one come out. I'm not sure. If I was them, I'd probably be doing it because that formula seems to work. You know, you can get a bit out of it. But so they're in a really good spot now because they can sort of choose, well, what do we want to do? Do we want to repeat this again? It's worked two times. We can't do it too many more times because people are going to get sick of it, especially that style. You can only do so many melodies where it's with that sound where it's too similar and people are like, what the fuck? But they're in a really good spot. Like they can do a lot with that. And I think the way they're playing it is smart. They released, well, Medusa at least, released a single recently, the fuck is it, How to Love or something, and it's nowhere near as big as the others, but it's good because it's like a real sort of house track. So they've had their two big commercial hits to which has garnered them a huge audience, and now they're sort of going back to their roots of real sort of house music. I mean, Lose Control though is a perfect house song. If you the whole thing is just fucking flawless. The whole structure of Lose Control, if you want an example of a brilliant house song, I'd say Lose Control. Now granted, if you have any viewers who are like proper house music fans, I'll be like, that's not fucking house music. It doesn't go for 8 minutes and fucking
the OGs.
You know, it doesn't have a kick drum playing by itself for an intro for 2 minutes. That's not fucking house music. But in today's terms, that's just a perfect house song, Lose Control. Brilliant songwriting. Beautiful vocal over the top, the way it flows in from the verse into the build up. The build up is there, but it's just there enough to let the listener know, oh, something's coming. And then what happens? Really simple drop, catchy as fuck, still big enough to bang in the clubs. Like it's perfect. It's perfect. It's just fucking perfect. They're geniuses. Yeah. They really are. They found a fucking gold mine with that, with Lose Control and Piss Your Heart. And it's good because I think dance music sort of needed that. Dance music really sort of died off, I guess, 2016, like 2015 started declining. You know, the glory days, golden era of EDM per se was like 2011, 2016. You had like people like Martin Garrix just fucking blowing up.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of people coming up and a whole bunch of different genres sort of coming up as well, together. Yeah, exactly.
But then it's, you know, it exactly right, like you were saying earlier, it just starts to get a bit saturated. And if you're not already established, well, you're going to have a hard time trying to break into the market now. And so, you know, dance music slowly faded away. It's still always huge, you know, but it's not as big as what it used to be. And now, though, it's sort of come back because all the genres are getting blended. You've got like, I can't even think of any examples, how ironic. But like, you know, you've got these big pop singers singing on like sort of more urban and hip hop beats, or you've got a house producer working with, you got Calvin Harris working with Dua Lipa, for example. Perfect example.
Yeah, or even like Steve Aoki does songs with everybody.
Yeah, he does. You know, same thing. Like, so everyone's working together now, which is cool. And it's sort of like put like these boys like Medusa, for example. It's good for dance music in that it's like, look at this. People still really appreciate and will listen to fucking good house track. And I think it needed. I think it needed that little push because it was getting taken over by fucking all the hip hop, all the Drakes and Billie Eilish's and
Post Malone, for sure. Of course, that's bound to happen. Everything's supposed to have ups and downs, and you just sort of ride the waves that come through. Yeah, that's it, man.
Balance of pop, hip hop, and like dancey sort of stuff. That's cool. Go on.
No. I was actually going to say, I had a little geezer at your Instagram, and I saw your last post. You're sort of teasing about a Mater EP. What's the go with that, man?
So, I don't really know. I was just laying in bed, and I was like, because, all right, so I don't have fucking millions of fans, you know, like, We want music. But now and then, which I didn't really elaborate too much on earlier, but when you said, you know, like, surely your opinion is still valuable because surely you still have, you know, lots of contacts and people that know you produce. Yeah, like, you are right. Like, I have people who are like, hey, man, like, or people from school even who are like, dude, when are you going to release some music? So there's still a demand, albeit minuscule and, you know, tiny, but there still is a demand. And that's really like, that's the song, my first release, Mechanical Dissonance, which I released in January. I don't really like want to put it out as such independently because like as I said earlier, I'm like, oh, I want to get signed to a label and like go with them and they'll have a, you know, have a PR campaign behind my releases and I want to be part of a label and a family and blah, blah, blah. Well, it just doesn't work out like that. You've got to demonstrate to a label that you're worth signing, you know, a lot of the time. You know what I mean? Unless you're some fucking Martin Garrix whose email got read and they're like, holy shit, this kid's music is insane. We've got to sign him. You know what I mean? It just doesn't work like that all the time. And but I was like, well, I always get asked, like, well, where can I listen to your music and things like that? And I had to keep telling people, same thing for years, I don't actually have anything on like released right now, but maybe in the future, like same script over and over. And like, I don't know, people just get sick of that after a while. And so I was just like, well, fuck this. And I really like this song. I'm happy with how it sounds now. I'm at a level now where I'm confident it's like, okay. You know what I mean?
Like
I said, you'll always think you're shit, but I know like, oh, well this is okay shit. Like, someone will listen to us. And that's basically the main motive. There's one person out there who will hopefully, you know, benefit from listening to this or enjoy it.
Yeah, of course, man.
Like, I don't... Yeah. I mean, I'd love to have fucking millions of streams and headlining festivals. That'd be awesome. That's a dream. But, I mean, generally speaking, if my music can, like, distract someone for, like, a few minutes, you know what I mean, from whatever shit is going on in their life, then I'm happy. Like, that's kind of how I see it, you know. That's what I want to do with my music and content.
Of course,
and like, I just want to create cool shit that I'm like, this is cool. Someone out there will appreciate this. You know what I mean? And fuck it, at the end of the day, like, we're all going to die in 80 years. You can't just live the whole, oh, I don't want to release it because it's not perfect. Because if you keep trying to make perfect music, you'll never release anything. Because no music is, you can't make it perfect. It just doesn't work like that. So I just decided to put it out. Then I had somewhere, then as well, right? That's sort of like building a resume in a way, especially as an independent artist.
Yeah, of course.
And when you start sending new stuff, like, for example, if I was just to send something new that I make to a label, like, hi, you know, insert label name here, just created this new, you know, blah, 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 I got this new song, really inspired by some of the other tracks of the label, hope you like it, whatnot, here's a link to my previous release as well, da da da. It's sort of like a resume in a way, like a catalog.
Yeah, and you've got, I was gonna say catalog. It's a good sort of thing. Like, people can backtrack through and see, like, hey, this dude's not just playing around. Like, he's got a full on catalog of music to go.
Well, exactly right. I mean, if you're hiring a photographer for a wedding, you know who you're gonna think. Who do you think is gonna be better? The person that's got, you know, done 50 weddings and has their portfolio readily available for you to see, or the person who's done, you know, 50 weddings but can't show you any of their
Man.
Do you know what I mean? Like, so, like, because I've made the same amount of songs as, you know, producer X or this guy or whoever, right? If not more than this guy or the next, but the label doesn't know that. Like, no one knows that because you're not putting it out there for people. So at the end of the day, you're just gonna have, like, my mindset was just like, well, fuck it, dude. You're not going to get anywhere sending emails all day because the odds of it even getting seen is low enough as it is. There's so much music being created at the moment. The chances of an A&R seeing your email, first of all, is very slim because their inboxes are just flooded. Then you've got to roll the dice on whether they're actually going to like your song. You know, maybe that A&R just doesn't like the fucking key you wrote the song in. The way that the shoe just doesn't fit.
Yeah,
they just don't like one thing about the chords and that puts them off. So you got to go from even getting seen to then having them like the song, and then the label all agreeing, yeah, this is a good song, we should release it. Sort of, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So you've really got to
For sure.
And like, but the thing is, you get very bogged down, like. Especially when people don't read your emails. I always prefer a no, sorry, it's not suitable for the label, compared to nothing. Because at least a no, you know, all right, well, you know what, that's fair enough, I'm just going to keep improving. And not only that, because you've sent them something and they've heard it and they said, no, sorry, it was shit, we didn't like it. You come back in 6 months, you send them something, you go, oh, look at that, this kid that whose music we, you know, said wasn't suitable for the label, listen to this one they produced, like, this is awesome, but I can hear how much they've improved or whatnot. So the more you produce, the more you send out, the more opportunities you'll make for yourself. And like, granted, I can't speak from experience on that, but from friends in the industry, you know, whatnot, the more you're putting out, the better result you have. I mean, like, it's cliche, but you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. It's fucking true. You can write the best song in the world. If you're not sending it to someone to hear or to a label or whatnot, for them to review it and potentially release it or whatever, or sending it to Post Malone for him to sing on, Post Malone's not going to sing on, is he? Like, do you know? Like,
yeah, exactly right. It's such a good attitude to have too, man. Like that, you know, you gotta keep throwing it out there. You know, you gotta keep pushing and pushing and pushing and yeah, man. That's it. Hey, bro, we've done. Oh, sorry, man. Go on.
I was just gonna say quickly. I know you gotta wrap up. I gotta go soon, anyways. But I was just gonna say.
Yeah.
Like,
we don't have to, but yeah.
That's all right. A lot of people get in that mindset though when they get no's. They can get really bogged down by, you know, because it's a passion project. It's something that you've put time into. It's creative. And so someone telling you, oh, no, sorry, it didn't fit the label style or whatnot.
Yeah.
Especially if you've thought, oh, my God, this label or this person's going to love it. And then you send to them, they're like, hey, sorry, not really feeling it. And you're like, fuck. I got a lot of friends who are really bad with that, actually. Like, which is bad because their fucking music is great. But just because one, like, this label didn't like it, it does. It really bogs you down. And, I mean, I have days as well where I'm like, fuck. Like, I sometimes have days where I'm like, not recently, but I would have days where I was like, nah, fuck this. Like, and I've never wanted to quit. I've never, ever wanted to quit. But you do have days where you're like, holy shit. Am I just going to be like this forever? Like, am I ever going to get anywhere?
Yeah, and you get that weird, then, like, stagnant feeling.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah. You're not making any progress. But then I think you just have to have just enough willpower and resilience not to give in to that shitty negative attitude and just be like, nah, you know what? Don't, like, I always try to think, like, nah, don't bitch out, you know? And as cliche and maybe cringy as it is, you know, like, you didn't spend all those sleepless nights for nothing, you know. But that's really what you think about. You think about all the fucking time you put in it. More than the money you spent on this sound, like on this synthesizer or this effect or this whatever, all you're thinking about is the time. Because, like, and, you know, because that's all that matters. The best part about producing is when you're in your room, right, spending so much time on something, and then you're just like, dude, this is fucking sick. And then, like, you're super happy and super proud of it. And then, like, you show your friends, like, oh, listen to this thing I made last night. And they're like, whoa, that's dope. And that's all that matters, really. Like, I can give a fuck if, I mean, well, okay, imagine I would if I had millions of people saying, you need to fucking shit. You know, that would probably get to you, understandably. Yeah. But, like I said, as long as one person's like, hey, dude, I was going to do something horrible to myself and your song came on shuffle and I just sat there and thought 3 minutes, maybe I shouldn't do this, and then I didn't, so thank you. That's the shit that, like, when I get that
message, makes it worth it, man.
That, dude, 100%, that's the message that I look forward to receiving. People like Martin Garrix and all that, they get those all the time, and I just imagine that that's what keeps them going, you know, one of the things that keeps them going for sure. So ideally, sure, like, at the end of the day, I just want to put out content and shit that I think is cool. Like, I go from wanting to do stuff like, I'm really into, like, Blade Runner, like, Star Wars theme, like, sort of sci-fi shit, but, like, dark. So, like, golden features-y, but in the future. I don't know. Anyways, I just want to put out cool shit and have the people that want to appreciate it. You know, you can't be thinking, trying to please everyone. When I was younger, I tried to think like that. Like, I want to make music that everyone will like. Not everyone likes the same music. It's just impossible. So, But I think once you learn certain things, you sort of start to learn how to navigate your way through different areas of the industry, I guess, because it's not just about production. It isn't. It is. You've got to learn, like we mentioned, bits about the business, contracts and shit like that. You've got to learn a bit about marketing. How can you make yourself more attractive to fans and whatnot? Like, so, I don't know. We could talk about it for hours, bro, and I could fucking...
I was literally going to say, because we have done an hour, which is fucking sick, man, but, like, I would honestly love to do another one, like, obviously, maybe...
Yeah.
In a couple months or something, and, like, I said this to Darcy when I did it with Darcy, I was like, man, let's check in every so often and see how things are going, because as someone who is, you know, you're working your way up, that journey is so awesome. And if you can sort of flash back and see, like, hey, this is where I was 3 months ago, this is where I am now. Like, I think that'd be sick. And I know, like, you know, people are going to see how passionate you are. And I hope that people can see, when they listen to this, people can see that how passionate you are, and that passion goes, hey, man, like, I want to give this guy a go, because he obviously loves the industry and that, man. It's really good, you know. And the thing about it is, man, I come out of these conversations, especially with you, I see how passionate you are, and I go straight to my desk. I'm like, let's keep going. No, dude, let's keep going.
Dude, exactly the same. I'm about, as soon as this is wrapped up, and I get this KFC. I'm hopping straight onto music, bro. I think this is really a good platform, because exactly right, especially in a time like this, man, where everything is so draining and gloomy, to be able to have a conversation and just forget about all that shit and just re-spark some creativity is really beneficial, especially to a lot of people. So it's good what you're doing. I'm really appreciative. Thanks, bro. I'm sure a lot of people are too, especially for Brisbane.
Thanks, man. Up the Brisbane scene, boy. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
All right, brother. I'd
be happy to come back on, dude. I'd love to.
Fuck, let's do it.
Hopefully, like, I mean, if I was, yeah, if things go well in the near future and whatnot, yeah, that'd be awesome to be like, oh, look, 3 months.
I'd love it, man. I mean, I would honestly love it.
It's short term, but
yeah, but you know, it's always good to check in
with you too. Hey,
yeah, bro, of course, man. Hey, where can people find you and find your music, dude?
Well, all my socials are just like Music by Mader, M-E-D-A.
Yeah, I'll tag it all. I'll link it all in the description below. So you'll have it all. I'll link it on Instagram too when I post that photo. So hopefully people that listen to The Hermit will be able to jump over to you. And like, you know, what would you sort of say, just really briefly, what would you sort of say, if the style of music you make, what is your ideal person? Who would love it?
If you like Golden Features or Marla, or you're just into Blade Runner style things in general, Star Wars esque things. Well, thanks, King.
yeah, boy.
If you're into that, like just shit like that, hopefully you'll like my stuff. Yeah. Like, and I try to do some little vintage things now and then. I incorporate a lot of my style from like 80s, some 80s synth style stuff.
Yeah, man.
Like the whole Blade Runner themey sort of shit. And then like I want to do branding like that stuff and blah 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 in the future when I'm big, you know. But anyway, but yeah, if you're into like so you like Golden Features or whatnot, you might like my shit. I don't know. I don't really know. But yeah, so just music and Mader.
Good. Awesome. Like I said, I'll link it below. That's fantastic, man. Thank you so much for coming on, brother.
No,
I'm gonna wrap
this
up real quick because my no dramas, and my AirPods are about to go flat. I can hear it going ding, ding, ding.
Dude, my phone's on, man.
But
2%.
How good. We made it, brother. We made it. Guys, if you like the Inner City Hermit podcast, go subscribe, do all that stuff. You would have heard it in the intro. I'm not going
to
bore you. Thank you so much, mate.
Yeah, subscribe
to Inner City Hermit. You are a fucking legend. Thanks, brother.
All right.
Thanks, brother.